It's time for Branding Business, the only show that brings branding experts and corporate executives together to explore how branding your business can improve both your top-line growth and bottom-line performance. Brought to you by Rikus Baird. And now, here's your host.
Hello, and welcome again to Branding Business with Rikus Baird. This is Alan Brew, and my guest today is Steve Patti. Steve was formerly Chief Marketing Officer of Pier 1 Hosting, a computer hosting company based in Vancouver. Now he is currently a principal with Social Exposure, a social media monitoring startup that helps brands and agencies mine social data and turn it into insights for improving business decisions. Hello, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon, Alan.
So, Steve, social media is the big hot topic of the moment. Everybody's talking about it. But everybody seems to have a different opinion about what it is. Can we start by defining our terms? From your perspective, what is social media?
Social media really, for the marketer today or any brand, represents a collection of digital communication channels. They're used by consumers and businesses alike to share information, to collaborate, professional networking, and even transaction. And as we know, they come in a lot of forms and a lot of flavors, ranging from Twitter, a microblog format limited to 140 characters, to a variety of professional networks like LinkedIn, where serious business people are discussing real-world business issues in groups, and deal networking and personal networking is quite the norm.
Right, so that's a lot of different kinds of media, Steve. How do you, and they're all just grouped into this loose term called social media. But LinkedIn is for the professionals, Twitter is for anybody who has a point of view, and everybody seems to have a point of view these days. So how do they relate to each other?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, there, as I mentioned, various forms of communication, and each of these mediums are particularly well-suited. As you mentioned, Twitter, with its limited character format and the fact that everybody has a point of view, is really a great tool in a lot of ways to capture someone's attention in those 140 characters and use that then as a way to redirect their attention to perhaps more content-rich destination, perhaps
right.
A full blog site, perhaps a brand's website where there's product information. It could be an event or conference website. But with its format, it is like a texting SMS platform in that you're not going to get into long dialogue exchange. There are other sites, categorically sharing sites. So whether that's photo sharing, other sharing, or bookmark sites, there are sites that are dedicated, of course, to networking. We mentioned LinkedIn, but when we look at other forms of social sites, particularly Facebook, that's done, you know, really, really well with nearly a billion users. Again, each of these formats are designed for a different type of dialogue exchange. And I think for brands today, they're experimenting with how best to use these mediums to reach a business objective.
Right. I think the popular concept of social media is teenagers in Starbucks with their noses pressed to their iPhones, texting each other. And for the business person, you know, the business executive, it's obviously important to understand what it is. But is it any more than just noise in cyberspace, or can we actually get into what people are saying and use that information?
Well, yeah, the answer is clearly yes to the second point. And to the first point, I was at the Marketing Profs B2B conference in May of 2010 in Boston and heard one of the C-level executives from Google quote a statistic that really caught my attention to your point about is this just, you know, kids or a craze or a fad. And in 2010, in May of 2010, the statistic that was shared is that there were more grandmothers on Facebook than users under the age of 21. And that caught the audience a little bit by surprise, but the story was explained that the grandmothers would use the Facebook platform in this case, or grandparents, to check up on what their kids were doing at college, looking for those late-night party pictures or whatever they might find. And lo and behold, would find someone that they hadn't perhaps seen or heard from in 30 or 40 years, They're on Facebook. They begin a collaboration, and lo and behold, you've got somebody in the 60 and over age group now who is embracing social media and begins to use it for personal means. So there's clearly an age distribution balance. It's not just for kids. The question of, you know, can real data be mined? We really believe it can. We've taken a look at, from a business perspective, six areas where companies can extract meaningful insight if they're willing to look. And those six areas include compliance around regulatory. So, for instance, in the healthcare space, you know, HIPAA is a big concern. Healthcare brands are very concerned about engaging in social media for fear of some sort of HIPAA violation. There are very accessible software monitoring platforms out on the market that would allow a healthcare provider to actually monitor staff conversations or patient conversations that mention their brand, and similar to a Google alert, highlight anything that could contain something that could create a HIPAA violation or at least concern for that. Banking is another highly regulated vertical where regulatory compliance with FINRA, FDIC, NCUA, et cetera, are real-world daily operational challenges for financial institutions. So regulatory compliance, these are great tools, and it's a great way to make sure that your brand is complying with regulatory requirements. And the others are in the areas of reputation management, lead generation, content marketing, customer feedback, and developing buyer personas, really deepening the understanding of our buyers so we can target our market more effectively.
Interesting, Steve. So how does social exposure fit into this business model? What exactly do you do?
Well, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, Alan, social media is continuing to evolve. And the brands that are just now either coming to grips with the fact they're going to have to engage are also coming to grips with how do you organize and staff for this? And what do the workflows look like? I mean, who owns the responsibility, let's say, for regulatory compliance monitoring versus who owns the responsibility internally to perhaps look for sales-ready conversations that are going on that could be routed to an internal sales department and everything in between. And so we work with brands to outline for them these six areas of insights that they may be interested in reaching out and connecting, and then really working with them to define workflows around what tasks need to be done, what organizations need what levels of information, and then plugging the skills gaps by providing analysts that can actually do the work. So no different than a brand might outsource its SEO work or its pay-per-click advertising to an agency or an independent analyst team. You know, we really come alongside these brands first to educate and then to help them again with the analysts who can help run these monitoring tools, extract this data, and help turn data into insight so that the brand's decision makers aren't having to increase substantial amounts of headcount or fundamentally rework budgets and the way that they do business on short order.
And Steve, back to an earlier question, or connected with an earlier question, how do you know who is on social media? You mentioned Google determining that there were more grandmothers on Facebook. But are grandmothers the people we want to be tracking? Are serious business people actually using social media that is a usable kind of input?
Well, that really speaks to one of the first things that we would typically discuss with a client is really to have them articulate who is your target market or your target audience. And I say market first because if it's somebody they wish to sell, we want to understand who they're trying to reach to conduct a sale transaction so that we can begin to identify the social networks where these individuals may be congregating. The word audience is used pretty deliberately because if a brand's goal is not necessarily to engage in social media to consummate a sale transaction, but they might want to engage specific audiences to establish the brand, position the brand, to create points of view in an industry that is particularly strategic, then we're talking less about a market and more maybe perhaps about an audience. So there are a variety of ways to identify which platforms we find these audiences or markets, and we kind of consider it a tops-down and a bottoms-up approach in terms of two ways you can do this. using some broad search tools, we can identify social conversations where, let's say, take my old employer in the hosting industry. If they're interested in targeting a cloud computing group, we can search for a variety of cloud computing-related conversations. We can do that through broad search, just typing it into Google or other avenues, or we could go to, say, the Spiceworks online community of IT professionals. We could scan LinkedIn for Java or virtual infrastructure groups. So there's a variety of ways to start with broad groups and then begin to identify key influencers and individuals in those groups and then develop engagement strategies. The other way around to think about this is you start with influencers and you work backwards if they're particular thought leaders in a brand's industry and followers of that thought leader represent an audience the brand wants to reach. We can find out through, you know, a variety of ways, through Twitter, through LinkedIn, through a variety of platforms and looking at these people's profiles, groups they're members of, et cetera, we could find out which groups these thought leaders belong to and then begin to work from the individual up to the group level to try to pinpoint audiences that the brand might want to engage. So without getting into too much detail, that maybe gives you a couple of process approaches from the group to the individual or from the individual back to the group. And as you engage in these groups, you begin to figure out if your targeting was on point.
Right. Interesting, Steve. You mentioned influencers there. Are there any particular types of brands that are more susceptible to social media and the kind of thing that you deliver for clients, Steve? Are consumer brands more interesting for you? Or you mentioned earlier healthcare, too, which I suppose is more of a B2B kind of play, but any thoughts on brand susceptibility?
Well, you know, I have some thoughts on that, and I read an interesting statistic that I got an hour success feed about an hour before this interview. It was a small business in particular. Small businesses across verticals are still not yet convinced social media is a game changer in terms of lead generation. They're not convinced it's going to provide them with the type of opportunities that traditional advertising, word-of-mouth, face-to-face types of events might. And there's some reasoning behind that, and it has to do with small businesses also not having the staff, the expertise, or the budgets to engage in social media effectively. So it's somewhat self-fulfilling prophecy. So if we took a look at a snapshot today horizontally, I think that there's a direct correlation between the size and budgets of the marketing departments, the pedigree of the organization, and their willingness to test and to engage via these social media channels. So, you know, we've got the example of Best Buy years ago with their customers' implementation of Twitter. We've got a lot of examples, Dell and who have whole command and control rooms of analysts monitoring social media, responding via social media. But these are big brands. They've got well-funded budgets, and they understand modern marketing. So I would say horizontally, the larger the organization, particularly the marketing department and skill sets, the more likelihood there is that they're using social media not just for marketing, but introducing its benefits across the organization in terms of HR, legal and compliance, and even market insights. Vertically then, if we remove the size element, the more regulation in the industry, the less social media adoption there is. So healthcare and financial services are two very slow to adopt verticals. They understand their patients or their investment clients are using social media, but the institutions have not really figured out a way to engage in which they feel that it doesn't pose a regulatory issue. So right. We have a correlation between regulation and resistance to adopt. Then you've got kind of a sweet spot that you alluded to, Alan, which consumers, consumer packaged goods, consumer durable brands who are selling particularly to the 40 and under age target are really at a point of this is not optional, it's a necessity. Real-time engagement opportunities between your markets and the brand in the low cost in which you can execute that engagement makes social media very attractive. So we see the traditional brands you would expect, apparel, food and beverage, you know, other types of entertainment brands, you know, fashion, you know, they're all embracing this as a way to build the type of engagement they can't get through print advertising, billboards, et cetera.
Right. So I think some listeners might want reassuring that social media is also relevant to the smaller kind of businesses, the SMBs. Understandably, the large corporations do want to track at least their reputation online and monitor it. But what advice would you give to SMBs, Steve, in terms of social media, those companies without the resources of the big corporations?
Well, Alan, you're really hitting on a key a myth that a lot of SMBs had. You know, I read this this study that was done, as I mentioned before this interview. I was interested in kind of seeing the research methodology and what the specific concerns were. But so what social media does for the small business and even the mid-sized enterprise, let's say you're a $300 million company, but you're number five or number seven brand share player, it levels a playing field. You're no longer at a messaging disadvantage based on how many conferences you can attend as a speaker, how many events you can exhibit at, how much print or broadcast media you can buy. If you have an internet connection and you have some thought leadership to share and you can do some basic tagging, you're in the game. You're a publisher. And brands are increasingly having to think like publishers. And to the extent you are able to resonate timely messaging to an audience that's willing to listen and they're willing to then share what they're hearing and learning, you can build a substantial following. Yesterday, I happened to give a presentation. It was a second in a two-part series to the MGMA, the Medical Group Management Association. And the first one about 6 weeks ago was on listening, social media monitoring. We've all heard growing up, two ears, one mouth, use them in that proportion. Mm-hmm. Social media need not involve posting anything. There is a substantial amount of insight to be gained by listening to what your competitors are doing, listening to what your customers are asking for in terms of improved product and service delivery, feedback on your channels. You know, there is competitive intelligence to be gleaned, all of this. Then if you decide to actually engage, which was yesterday's presentation, there's a lot of low cost, very high touch, easy to execute things that small businesses can be doing to turn customers into advocates. And those advocates, when posting very positive things online, help your SEO, help your Google indexing. Read more stats, and I've got reports going back for the last 3 years on the growing influence of peer reviews on the buying cycle, both in B2C and B2B. And from medical to consumer goods, anywhere from 51 to 70% of purchases are primarily influenced by friends, family, or professional peer recommendations and reviews. Mm.
Social media really does level the playing field for a lot of companies then.
Well, it really does. It really does. It's ubiquitous access. And one of the things that we talked about in the MGMA presentation yesterday is a small business healthcare provider, say with three offices, has no problem writing, you know, a $50,000 check for billboards. But they maybe can't seem to come to grips with paying $15 or $20 an hour for a university grad student to work 10 hours a week to help them with social media and to build engagement. So I think it's a paradigm shift that's going to have to happen where the SMB population realizes this is not beyond their reach and it certainly is affordable. It need not involve a multi-person, multi-year commitment. You can test and find out what works along the way.
Right. So just to bring it back to your company, Steve, Social Exposure, how do you fit into this picture? Do you advise companies as to how to develop a capability around social media, or do you help them to understand what's happening?
Well, we work typically to do both, and we typically will work with, you know, mid-sized brands. So, for instance, you know, the speaking, you know, opportunity that I've had with the MGMA, you know, we're not particularly looking at that as a business development opportunity. This is a giving back opportunity. This is an opportunity to approach healthcare in the SMB space, really give them some good ideas, a couple of playbooks that we've actually published on ways they can get in the game and help grow their business. On the far other end, the Fortune 1000s, they've already got a lot of this capability in-house. They've licensed monitoring tools. They've built staff and workflows around managing that themselves. It's the mid-market, really, that's on the fence a bit. You know, they've got the money, they've got they understand why it could be beneficial. They're just looking for somebody to come along and kind of hold their hand a little and take them on what we call a crawl, walk, run strategy of 6 month, you know, perhaps monitoring and benchmarking. So they're, you know, able to understand the data mining value. Second 6 months, begin to identify a couple of tightly defined audiences they want to engage. testing ways that they can drive sales from that. And then, say, in the third 6 months, really roll out a more intentional and ambitious plan around reaching more markets. And so we provide them both with the what they need to do as well as the how they need to go about doing it. And then we provide the staffing to help them do it as a below-the-line cost.
I see. Very interesting, Steve. We're coming down to the last couple of questions. Time is running out, but I would like to get your point of view on the future of social media. These brands seem to come along like flowers in springtime and then fade away equally as quickly. We've got the big ones like Facebook and Twitter, LinkedIn. Are they here to stay, Steve, or will they fade out as different kinds of applications come in and replace them?
So I think that it's all about the numbers. You know, if Facebook were a country, it'd be the third largest on Earth at just around 1 billion users. Population of India is about 1.2 billion. So Facebook, you know, here probably in a year or so will overtake India in terms of more users than they have in population. So when you look at those kinds of staggering numbers or the fact that there are 175,000 tweets every 60 seconds on the Internet or that there are 2 million YouTube views every 60 seconds on the Internet, clearly this collection of communication channels is here to stay. And there's conditioned behavior for an entire generation now who expect this is how they interact with a brand. I think with regards to then players beyond the Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn big three, we've already seen some consolidation, and we'll see new things come and old brands go. Pinterest a year ago was a non-topic. Now that over the last year has gained substantial momentum. So I think just like anything else, we live in an economy and a market of risk takers, entrepreneurs, and opportunists. And as there are new forms of social connection, there will be entrepreneurs bringing companies to the market to fill those communication needs. Others who fail to stay competitive might find themselves acquired or not in the competitive landscape, you know, 2-3 years from now.
Mm-hmm. Steve, final question. Do you have a Twitter account?
I do. Our Twitter handle is @socialexposure6. The number 6, @socialexposure6, for anybody that might want to communicate with us.
Right, and is that the best way for people to connect with you?
Either that, or they can visit our website at www.social-exposure.com.
That's terrific, Steve. Anything you'd like to add before we close the show?
Well, Alan, we really believe that brands who are serious about maintaining their positioning and their competitiveness in the market have a 7x24x365 pipeline of insights. That is incredibly valuable, and that benefits the end consumer, the end business user, as those brands can improve product and service delivery by listening. We think it's a great time to be in the branding business, to be in the marketing business. We believe that as brands learn to embrace this and not fear it, it's one more way that they can create enduring relationships with their customers.
Steve, great conversation. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you for the sponsorship for this program.
That was Steve Patti, a principal with Social Exposure, and thanks again for listening.
You've been listening to Branding Business, the only show that brings branding experts and corporate executives together to explore how branding your business can improve both your top-line growth and bottom line performance. To hear more, simply visit our website, brandingbusiness.com, or tune in next week to learn how you too can build your brand and move your business forward. Brought to you by Rikus Baird.